So I want to start this year by not only thanking Kazakh and Turing Time for putting together this year, but for all the amazing things that they do for Klal Yisrael. And in today's year, I want to delve into one of the most incredible and deep topics in Torah thought, but I want to start with a story. And the story is of an alien who comes from outer space to your backyard. And you want to introduce some of the most incredible things on planet Earth to this alien, who knows where this alien's from. So you love chocolate, and you want to help this alien really get a handle, really get a sense of what it means to be on planet Earth. And for you, being on planet Earth means enjoying chocolate. So you come over to this alien and you tell him all about chocolate. Chocolate is this amazing, amazing product. It's sweet, it's made out of cocoa bean, you add some sugar, it's delicious. So the alien says, "Oh, okay." And then you say, "This is what a picture of chocolate looks like." And then you spell out the word chocolate underneath the picture. So now you've told him about it. You've shown him a picture of it, he sees the word, and then you say, "You know what? I actually have a piece of chocolate." And you show him, now he sees the chocolate. But then you say, "Here," you hand him the chocolate, now he feels the chocolate. But then you open up the wrapper for him, and he can smell the chocolate. But then you say, "Put it in your mouth, it's food, you can taste it." Then he tastes the chocolate. Those are all different types of knowledge, different types of experiences. And you'll see as we go through the shiur why that's relevant and why that's important. So I want to talk about perhaps the ikkar topic when it comes to Judaism is, what is the ikkar? What is the core? What is the source of our Masorah, of our tradition? Klai, so we just came from Yetzias Mitzrayim, from Pesach. We're leaving Pesach. We're going to Matan Torah. We're counting Sfiras HaOmer. And we're really tapping into our Masorah, our tradition. And we have to really question where is the ikkar? Where is the focus of our tradition? When we think about what it means to be a Jew, and we talk about the different types of zechiras, different types of remembrances that we have, but what are we tapping into? What are we sourcing ourselves back into when we think about our identity as Jews? So if I would ask you, what would you think the ikkar, the core, the essence of being a Jew, what memory, what event, what idea, what would you say? What would you think we should be tapping into? So the real question that we're going to be delving into is the question of, should it be Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is where we just came from, that's what Pesach is about, Yetzias Mitzrayim, or should it be Matan Torah, Shavuos, which is where we're heading towards? And if you think about it, what was the entire goal of leaving Yetzias Mitzrayim? The entire goal was Kabbalas HaTorah, was receiving the Torah, connecting to Hashem, receiving our mission in life of being Ol Malchus Shemayim and being someone who's mitzvah, someone who is commanded to live a life according to the mitzvahs, according to Torah. But something very strange is at the core of this question, because if you think about it without a question, the foundation, the core, the center of our focus as a Masorah is always Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the Ramban says in Parshas Bo, one of the most famous Rambans, he says almost all of our mitzvos, especially the core mitzvos, are centered around this idea of Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. So when it comes to Shabbos, when it comes to Shema, when it comes to Kiddush, when it comes to Tzitzis, when it comes to Tefillin, we're always remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim. And is that logical? And we're going to build up this question the more we go into this year, but I want to frame this as a question to keep in the back of your mind. Why would it be more important to have Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim as opposed to Zeichel Matan Torah? I mean, one of the most basic problems with this is that the entire goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim was to get to Matan Torah. And Matan Torah was where we experienced Hashem, where we received the mitzvos. It's like, if you're going to open up an album with your wife or with your husband and remember, the paradigmatic memory of what your relationship is all about, are you going to go back to the first date? Are you going to go back to the engagement? Or are you going to the wedding album where we married Hashem? That's what Matan Torah was about. That's what Shavuos is about. So obviously, Yetzias Mitzrayim is core. It's essential. But can it be compared to Matan Torah? Can it be compared to the marriage, the engagement, or the quote-unquote first date? But the engagement was Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's the Eirusin, but the Nisun, the marriage, that was Matan Torah. So why do we root everything back to Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim? That's something I want you to keep in the back of mind. We're going to it gives several different approaches, but something which is not simple. It's a genuine question, and it's a good question. And we're not going to just give an answer, because the question needs to be strengthened, because it's not just a simple question of what's more important. As you'll see, it'll get a lot deeper. But what I want to do is I want to delve really deep into the difference between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Torah. And this is such a powerful topic. It is such a core topic. It contains really so many principles, which each of the ideas that we're going to delve into really requires a whole shiur. So this is a core topic. This is not just sharing a beautiful idea. This is going to the very heart and core of identity as a Jew, what it means to be Jew, belief in Hashem, emunah, bitachon, the essential core ideas that every sincere Jew should be grappling with and thinking about. We're going to really go to the heart and core of it. And obviously, you can't contain everything in one shiur, but I want to really delve deep into it. So because the shiur is going to be deep and it's going to be long, I'm going to recommend that for those of you who don't want to, or who can't, listen to the entire thing at once, that's okay. Because this is not, you know, for me, it took me years and years to develop this one shiur. So if you want to listen to it twice, if you want to listen to it in parts, that's completely fine. It's obviously going to be recorded. It'll be on Torah Time. It'll be on my website. It'll be in audio formats all over the place. But this is not just a beautiful, inspirational shiur. This is a shiur which is going to require focus, concentration. If it were me listening to this the first time, just trying to get back into a headspace before I would know these ideas, I would want to be taking notes. I would want to be thinking about this. This is one of the most important ideas that, in my opinion, anyone can think about. And we're going to the core of so many essential things. So I know I've kind of, you know, built this up, but I hope you'll see how important these ideas are. And the question that I want to delve into is, what is the difference between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah? Because the Ramban says that we learn almost all of the Ikari Emunah from Yetzias Mitzrayim. So if you go to Yetzias Mitzrayim, Hashem revealed himself to the world. So Hashem exists. And Hashem revealed that he's all-powerful, that he can overturn nature, or he revealed that there is no such thing as nature, meaning that everything is the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that, you know, the reason why things go up and down, or why water is water and not blood, or why, you know, ice and fire can't synthesize as one, like, that is not a fundamental rule. That's because Hashem willed that into existence, and Hashem can change that, and everything is subject to the will of Hashem. Hashem also revealed Hashgacha Pratis. He revealed reward and punishment, that he's engaged in the world, sees what's going on, and that if you do something wrong, you can get punished, do something right, you can get rewarded. We're not going to go into all of the different Ikari Emunah, because that, once again, would require really a whole series to delve into the Gimli Ikari Emunah and really delve into the nature of those specific 13. But on a very simple level, Hashem revealed his existence to the world in a fundamentally different way by Yetzias Mitzrayim. We've actually just gave a shiur a couple weeks ago on the difference between how Hashem revealed himself to the Avos, Kel Shakai, El Kim, versus Yud Kei Vav Kei. He tells Moshe, I'm going to reveal through the meaning of Yud Kei Vav Kei, and we really delved into what that means. And if you didn't listen to that shiur, you're more than welcome to. It's online. But I want to really delve into the Rambam's question. The Rambam challenges the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim and the miracles of the Midbar, and says that there was something very limiting about those miracles. And you can look up this Rambam. It's in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, in the Mishnah Torah. It's in Perek Ches. The Rambam says that when it comes to Klal Yisrael's belief in Hashem and belief in Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy, that previous miracles were not enough. The miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Midbar, they weren't enough. Shamamin apia osos, yesh belibo dofi. Because someone who believes in Moshe, believes in Hashem, just because of those miracles, those signs, yesh belibo dofi, there is in his heart some lack, some doubt. And he says, why? Because maybe those were done belat v'kishuf, right? She'efshar she'yasa os belat v'kishuf. Elakol osher she'asa Moshe b'midbar lefi hatzarech asam lo lehevi raya ala nevuah. So all of those miracles, one could have thought that maybe they were done Balat over Kishuf. So what's Lat and Kishuf? It really means Lat is like shadim, it's like sorcery, and Kishuf is also a form of sorcery. It's using, you know, dark energy. We're not going to get into what those ideas are. That's a whole medieval discussion about how the Rambam saw these types of concepts and ideas. But the Rambam is making a very interesting argument. He's saying that Yitzias Mitzrayim and really the miracles of the Midbar, for example, Bar Miriam and the Nani HaKavod and all the miracles, the Man, all these miracles, Kriyas Yamsuf, all of these miracles were limited. They were done because Klal Yisrael needed them. And it doesn't prove without a doubt that Hashem exists, that Moshe's prophecy was correct. There's something limiting, I wouldn't say problematic, but limiting in that you can question it, it can be doubted. But then the Rambam says that Matan Torah, that was fundamentally different. That's fundamentally different, right? So he says at the end, he says something very interesting. He says, so before Matan Torah, before Har Sinai, you could have questioned, you could have doubted, but Matan Torah, Har Sinai, that was 100% proof. So now it seems very clear that Matan Torah was something fundamentally different than Yitzias Mitzrayim. That the previous miracles of Yitzias Mitzrayim, even in the Midbar, those were miracles that were important, they were good, they were miraculous, but they weren't the ultimate. And you could have questioned them, you could have said maybe it was really sorcery, maybe Moshe was doing this, that's what the Mitzvah originally challenged Moshe, they said, you're not real, this isn't Hashem, this is you, you're just a great sorcerer. But he says the Har Sinai, according to the Rambam, Har Sinai Matan Torah, when Hashem revealed himself at Har Sinai, that was something fundamentally different. So it would seem now that the root of our emunah, the root of our belief in Hashem, in Moshe's prophecy, comes from Har Sinai, comes from Matan Torah. So once again, why is the root of our Masorah Yitzias Mitzrayim? Why is everything Zeich Yitzias Mitzrayim? And just to deepen this, we need to ask a question, why is Matan Torah better? Why is Matan Torah, why is Shavuos, what we're commemorating on Shavuos, what we're tapping into and connecting to on Shavuos? Remember, when it comes to Chagim, we don't remember, we re-experience, we tap into, we relive them, we take it to a further level. So when it comes to this Shavuos, we're not remembering what happened, we're re-tapping into Kabbalah Satorah, the experience of Kabbalah Satorah. But the question is, why is that better than Yitzias Mitzrayim? Why Yesh B'Libo Dofi when it comes to Yitzias Mitzrayim and the previous miracles, but Matan Torah, there's, you know, no doubt whatsoever. So we're going to try to understand this because it's not simple. There's no simple answer. So one aspect is that you can say that Yitzias Mitzrayim was a good proof. It's like 70%, 80%, 90%, 99%, but it wasn't perfect. Matan Torah, Kabbalah Satorah, when we met Hashem at Harsinai, that was 100%. That was so much better. And you can even say it, the Kuzer of Yehuda Levi, he develops this idea that Klal Yisrael has experienced the only open revelation to an entire Klal, a whole community of people. So there's no doubt, it wasn't that Moshe came down and said, I met Hashem. The Chazal says that the first two Dibros, Hashem himself spoke them. It was a transcendent experience. So we're talking about a fundamentally different type of proof than Yitzias Mitzrayim. And it's also, I mean, we're not going to go into this now, but every other religion doesn't have that claim. When it comes to other religions, they claim that an individual had this divine prophetic experience and then came out and revealed it to everyone else. For Klal Yisrael, Moshe didn't, for the last eight Dibros, Moshe told it because it was so overwhelming. I'm not going to go into this right now, but Klal Yisrael's neshamas even left their bodies when Hashem spoke. But the first two Dibros, Hashem himself spoke. It was open revelation for everyone. So the question, just before we delve deeper into this, one important question that many people ask is that that's not good enough for me. Because that's great for Klal Yisrael. They were there. But what about me? I wasn't there. I wasn't at Har Sinai. I didn't receive the Torah. I wasn't there. It's a famous question for why are we chayav in the Torah? We didn't commit to the Torah. Our ancestors committed to the Torah back, you know, when they were at Har Sinai. We weren't there. So the Ramban develops this powerful idea, which is, number one, the Ramban says that there's a Masorah. He says, very interesting, says, because there's a Masura, he says, if you look at it, it's in Dvarim, is Pirshan Torah, Dvarim Perek Dal Pasuk Das, he says, Ki ilu ruhu kol adoro. So it's like everyone's like, Ki lo nein sheker levanin, yiv lo nachil osam davar hevel, the ein bam, I'm not going to go into the whole Lashon Rabban, but he develops this idea that parents don't lie to their children, and there's a Masura. So you can question this, but the Rabban has a beautiful answer, is that we have a tradition, we have a Masura, you know, generation to generation, of what happened, and we carry on that Masura. And that's really what the Seder night is about. In Pesach, we carry on that Masura. But the question for why it should apply to you and I is still there. Meaning, once again, we weren't there. It's great that they experienced this, but did I experience it? So the Shlach HaKadosh, who actually, I'm a descendant of the Shlach HaKadosh, he says something extremely powerful. He says that every single Jewish neshama was at Har Sinai, and you were there. You did experience it, and you were actually at Ma'an Torah itself. And he says this beautiful idea, which also applies to Gerim. Gerim, they were also at Ma'an Torah. They were the individuals of the other Amim who, while the other nations refused to join into Klal Yisrael and accept the Torah, individuals did want to accept it. So those are the individuals who have that inclination to join into Klal Yisrael, to be Mekabel Malchus Shemayim, to be Mekabel the Torah. And they're simply returning to the root of when they originally accepted it at Har Sinai. So we have this idea developing. So we basically have so far developed this idea that Yetzias Mitzrayim was somewhat limited. Ma'an Torah was superior in some sense. So maybe Yetzias Mitzrayim was a really good proof. It was 99% or 80%, whatever it is. And Ma'an Torah is 100%. No questions. Yesh B'libo Dofi doesn't apply to that. So another advantage of Ma'an Torah, besides for the fact that there was a mass revelation to everyone, and we have a Masora, and the fact that Hashem revealed himself to us, there's another important aspect which the Ramban develops again in Perek Dal Pasuk Tes of Devarim, where he says that Ma'an Torah ensured that no future Navi would contradict the Torah. So this is a related point, because what's the importance of Ma'an Torah? The importance that Hashem himself gave us the Torah. So if another Navi comes in the future and says, I'm giving you a new Torah, different Torah, then no, Hashem himself gave us that original Torah and said that if a Navi comes in the future and rejects this Torah, it's not true. So not only was Ma'an Torah a better proof than Yetzias Mitzrayim, but it ensured the validity of the Torah. It ensured that no future Navi can come and contradict it, because we now, remember, the Rambam says that you have 100% proof in Hashem and Moshe's prophecy because of Ma'an Torah, and because of that, it says in the Torah that if a future Navi comes and contradicts the Torah, he's a Navi Sheker, so it provides the validity of Torah itself. So far we've basically developed how Ma'an Torah is a better proof, and it's also because of the fact that it's such an unquestionable proof, we know about the Torah's validity and how no one can ever contradict in the future. But now we have a really important question. Now we have perhaps the most important question we're going to ask right now is, why were the miracles of Mitzrayim even done? If the miracles of Mitzrayim were limited, Yesh B'libo Dofi, you can doubt them, you can question, maybe it's Nasha, maybe it's a sorcerer, maybe it's just Moshe Rabbeinu, why were they done? What was the purpose of the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim? If it's about Emunah and Hashem, Ma'an Torah was so much better. And if it was to free Klal Yisrael, there were so many other ways Hashem could have just taken Klal Yisrael out. What was the purpose, according to Chazal, it was a year long of Makos. What was the purpose of the Makos if Hashem was going to provide a much better revelation, much better proof of his existence to Klal Yisrael and Ma'an Torah? So that's a really good question, but it gets even, it can strengthen the question, it can deepen the question, because why is everything Zeich L'Yetzias Mitzrayim if Zeich L'Yetzias Mitzrayim is actually not the source of where we have the ultimate proof of Hashem's existence? And to take it a step further, you think of it like this. Like, we talked about how the entire goal is of Yetzias Mitzrayim is to get to Mount Torah. When you talk about a real goal, you focus on that destination. That was where we married Hashem. But you can strengthen the question even further, because, okay, fine. So we're now saying that Yetzias Mitzrayim should not be the root of our Masora, because the miracles of Ma'an Torah were even better. But is that true? Meaning everything we've developed so far itself can be questioned. Because think of it like this. Hashem himself says that the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim need to reveal his existence to the world. It's unbelievable. If you think about it, Hashem says, what's the purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim? L'man yidu, so that they know, so that you know that I exist. How can we say they weren't good enough to prove Hashem's existence? It's like, I just want you to understand like how we built this. We built this Yetzias Mitzrayim is limited. Ma'an Torah is better. So why is everything rooted in Yetzias Mitzrayim? But is that really true? Yetzias Mitzrayim is limited. Does not reveal Hashem's existence? If you look at the Torah, Hashem specifically tells Moshe that the entire purpose of the miracles and makos of Yetzias Mitzrayim is to reveal to Klal Yisrael that I exist. Hashem says explicitly, L'man teida. He says like 5 or 6 times to Moshe that I want Klal Yisrael to know that I exist. And for the Mitzrim, it was supposed to be a good enough proof to the Mitzrim too. He says, Hashem says, once again, L'man yidu. I want not only Klal Yisrael, but the Mitzrim to know that I exist. So one second, if we're saying Ma'an Torah is the ultimate revelation, Yetzias Mitzrayim is limited, Hashem himself said that the purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim is to reveal his existence to the world. So how can we say it's limited? Hashem himself thinks it's good enough. And not only does Hashem say that that's my goal, but it actually happens. The Torah specifically tells us that the Chartumim, the sorcerers, they tell Paro that we can't do some of these miracles when it comes to kingdom, when it comes to life, so it's too small. We're not going to get into the details there. The idea is that when it comes to evil, it can't apply once you get to the non-physical realm, but once you transcend sheer size. But we're not going to really delve into this idea because that really requires a whole nother sheer. But what happens? The Chartumim tell Paro that this is the Etzpe Lukimi. This is the finger of Hashem. This is Hashem. This isn't Moshe. This isn't some great sorcerer. So now we have a real problem. Because the Rambam says that there's something wrong with Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's limited. Yesh b'li budofi. But Hashem himself says that the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim are going to reveal to Klal Yisrael that Hashem exists, and they're going to reveal to the Mitzrim that Hashem exists. And clearly Klal Yisrael believed in Hashem when they left Mitzrayim. But the Mitzrim themselves say that that's not looking at me, that this is Hashem. This is not some sorcerer. This is Hashem. So what is going on here? How can we say that the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim were limited? So there's a potential answer you can give. One answer you could give is you can say that it was enough for the Mitzrim. It wasn't enough for the Jews. For the Jews, they needed more. But wait a second. First of all, why is that true? Why should it be that Klal Yisrael need a better proof? Shouldn't everyone need a perfect proof that Hashem exists? But Hashem says, L'man, that he wants to reveal his existence not only to the Mitzrim, but to Klal Yisrael. So something strange is going on here. Are the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim limited or aren't they? And if they aren't, what does Ma'an Torah provide that Yetzias Mitzrayim doesn't? And if they are limited, how come Hashem thinks they aren't? How come Hashem says, I'm going to reveal myself to Mitzrayim through the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim through the Makos? So this is really a fantastic, fantastic question. Whenever you want to delve into something deep, you want to make sure that you're invested, and you want to make sure there's a really good question you're trying to answer. This is a good question. There is no simple answer to this. We're going to really need to delve into this in a much deeper way. And to do that, I want to open up into a really profound topic, which once again questions another premise of this entire buildup, which is Ma'an Torah really unquestionable? Is the proof of Kabbalah Satorah, was that really, the Rambam says that no, Yesh B'li Budofi, that's only for Yetzias Mitzrayim. For Ma'an Torah, our eyes saw, our ears heard, it was Hashem himself, no questions whatsoever. Is that true? What do I mean by that? If you think about it, anything can be questioned. The Rav Tzadok is actually famous for saying that if Aristotle was at Har Sinai, was at Mount Torah, the next day he'd wake up and say it was all an illusion, it was all some hallucination, it was all fake. Anything can be questioned. And I want to really delve into this, because what do I mean by that? The simple answer as we developed is that Yetzias Mitzrayim was a good proof. This was a good enough proof. It was 70%, 80%, 98%, 99%, it wasn't 100%. In Matan Torah, that was 100. That was perfect. So we need Matan Torah to fill in the gaps, any potential holes, any potential problems. But if you think about it, as we just began to say, you can question anything. There's no such thing as an 100% rational proof. No such thing. Anything that you think you know can be questioned. Everything can be doubted. Now, when it comes to knowledge of Hashem, knowledge of Hashem's existence, rational proofs are great. You know, proof by design. You look at the world, it's extraordinary. You look at, learn biology, learn physics, learn science, learn psychology, learn mathematics, learn anything in this extraordinary world that we live in, and you'll be in awe. You'll say, it's impossible for this to just happen by accident. There must be a designer or a creator. It's like people say that the chances of this world coming into existence randomly, by accident, just a random Big Bang, the chances that a monkey throws ink at a painting, at a canvas, and it comes out like a perfect picture, like a Da Vinci. Or it's the same. It's the chances like a hurricane comes over an automobile, pieces and parts of automobiles, and the hurricane just randomly puts together a brand new car. Is this possible? Of course it's possible. Is it likely? It's not likely. Chances are like one, who knows how small the chances are. So is it possible? But look at the world. There must be that there's a creator. But that's not 100% proof, because there are holes in that. Every rational proof has holes. There's the idea of everything has a source. So if you what's your source? Your parents. What are your parents' source? Their parents. Everything comes from something else. Everything has a cause. So what's the first cause? What's the initial cause of reality? What caused the world to come into existence? So, for Aristotle, that was the prime mover. You can say that's Hashem. Hashem is the first cause. Oh, but doesn't everything a cause? So what's that first cause's cause? So no. Once you get outside the realm of time and space, that cause doesn't have a cause. So that's an extraordinary proof. That's a great idea, but it's not foolproof. Every rational proof has some loophole, some problem, some question, some leap of faith. You have to still take some level of I'm choosing to believe in this. Now here's the question. The question is, what can we actually know? Because reason, science, philosophy, logic, those are all limited. I mean, if you think about it, science nowadays, as far as we've come as human beings, the weather is still not a science that we have a handle on. If you think about it, the weatherman is very often very off. Sometimes it rains when he tells us it's going to be sunny. We cannot tell the weather, especially far enough in advance. We are limited in our use of reason, logic, and science. There are certain things that just are they evade, they transcend scientific tools. And when it comes to knowledge of Hashem, as great as reason is, there are always going to be potential problems in our rational proofs. And, forget knowledge of Hashem for a second. Everything you think you know, everything that you rely on in your life, to live your life, I don't think it's going to ever be 100%. And I'll give you some examples. When you fly in a plane, there is a chance, chas v'shalom, it should never happen to you or anyone you know, or anyone for that matter, but there's a chance that it has happened that it will crash. So why do you go on a plane? I mean, when you walk across the street, people, unfortunately, they die because things happen. When you go into a surgery, you should never have to go into a surgery. When people go into a surgery, there's no such thing as a surgery that is 100%. There's such unfortunate. I mean, obviously, there's really risky surgeries, but even surgeries that are like near perfect, that almost never go wrong, they go wrong. And they go wrong at the wrong times. I mean, there are countless stories of you get a kidney donation, it's supposed to be, almost 100% that everything should go right. There are stories where it doesn't. And yet people take their risk. I mean, if you think about it, when you go onto a footbridge, you test it out. Oh, you see if it's sturdy, if it can hold your weight. Do you know that it's going to hold your weight? Do you know that you're going to make it to the other side? Like, that's not how we live our lives. So just let's make a clear distinction. Practically living our lives, we do not go for 100%. We go for good enough. I mean, the footbridge is a good example because you don't know if your step is going to be, landing on a firm piece of wood, or if that wood will crack in half and you'll fall down into the ravine below. But how do you know that every step you take on the street, that some, you know, somehow the floor won't fall out from underneath you and you'll fall to the middle of the earth, the center of the earth. You don't know. Now, is that likely? Is it reasonable to live your life that way? Absolutely not. Is it possible? Has anyone ever fallen while walking into some hole that they didn't think was there? Of course, but we don't actually know. I mean, if you really think about it, I mean, this is, for some people think this is funny, but marriage is a risk. People get married and they think, I'm going to be happy. I mean, I'm not going to get into why many people get divorced, but it's a risk. If you're able, and obviously when you get married, you think it's 100%, but nothing we do is ever 100%. We always engage in some level of, you call it belief in the system, belief that it will work out, being an optimist, whatever you want to call it, but we don't live our lives with 100% certainties. And it gets actually much more, I mean, I wouldn't say troubling, but I would say interesting, because if you think about the most essential parts of your identity, you're also living with good enough proof. You don't have 100% proof of really anything about who you are. How do you know you're Jewish? How do you know you're Jewish? Because your parents told you. How do you know they're Jewish? Because their parents told them. How do you know something in the past 1,000 years of your lineage, of your yichus, how do you know something didn't go wrong? Now, for some of you, you might actually know all of this, but you definitely do not have 100% proof. For a lot of people, they don't have any proof whatsoever. They literally just believe their parents. But even for people who actually investigate their lineage, there's no such thing as 100% proof of anything. I mean, think of it like this. How do you know that your parents are your parents? How do you know? Were you there? Of course I was there. Do you remember? No, you don't remember. Of course you don't remember. How do you know that your parents didn't just like where they were going on a date and they saw a beautiful child and they said, hey, it looks a little bit like you. It looks a little bit like you. Let's just, how do you know? How do you, I mean, obviously, you don't. You have to believe or at least take their word for it. You can do research. You can do whatever you want. Most people don't do research. But how do you know 100% anything that you have, so to speak, believed about yourself and your identity? This one for me was kind of like, took it to another level, but Bertrand Russell is famous for saying, how do you know that you weren't created 5 minutes ago? How do you know that your memories are real? Maybe you were created 5 minutes ago with all of your memories in place, and you're actually 5 minutes old, and so is the entire universe 5 minutes old. Is it possible? Of course it's possible. But is it likely? It's not likely. Are you going to live your life that way? No. But what I'm trying to develop here is that there is nothing that is 100%. You know, scientists actually give a great example of the sun. How do you know the sun's going to rise tomorrow? There's no proof the sun's going to rise tomorrow. It's what's called, it's a common and constant phenomenon, but there's no scientific proof or reason why it has to tomorrow. So, of course you believe the sun's going to rise tomorrow, but it's not 100%. Nothing that you know or believe is 100%. And the question is, how big is this problem? Because on the one hand, it's not a big enough problem for us to change the way we live our lives, at least for most people. They're okay with not 100%. But the real question then is, what does rational knowledge provide us with? If someone says there's a 98% chance the surgery will go well, what does that do? What that does is it gives us enough of a reason to validate the decision to do it. So for example, it's not going to give you 100%. There's still going to be an element of doubt, yeshbi libo dofi, but not enough that you will invalidate it. So rational proofs are really important, but they're not 100%. And that's, and you know, for people who are not comfortable with these ideas can really be stirring. They can make you question things. But Immanuel Kant, who was famous for this idea, actually, you know, Jewish thinkers have been sharing this idea for thousands of years, but in the Western world, especially in the realm of philosophy, Kant is famous for questioning the validity of our physical senses. You know, you think that you are seeing the world the way it is, but you're not. You're seeing the world the way that your eyes translate physical phenomena through, you know, refracted light, how it the light comes into your retina, into your eyes, you're not feeling the thing itself. You have your brain sends a neural response when you touch something. It makes you have a sense of feel, but you don't know anything about anything itself. All you know is how your physical senses translate it. So, you know, I mean, a related point is you don't know what you look like. All you know is what you look like when you look in a mirror. You have no idea what you look like. You have no idea if what you, how you see the world and experience the world is how someone else experiences it. I mean, one of the classic thought experiments is maybe what you see as green is what someone else sees as blue, but you're taught to that this is green. And when you both look at it, you're seeing different things, but you're calling it green. Or maybe you see blue and you're calling it green. I mean, you don't know anything about how things actually are, how other people experience. All you know is how you experience life. And now the question is, what is real? What do you actually know? What can you know? What should you know? What have you attained? That's in epistemology. How do you gain knowledge of things if you can only use your five senses? So also use your intellect, use your mind, you learn Torah. But these are all questions of how you gain insight, gain knowledge. What is Torah knowledge relative to using reason? This was a classical medieval question that the Rambam really grappled with is, you know, what's the relationship between philosophy and Torah truth? And how do I gain access to the absolute truth? And what is absolute truth? What can I know using any of my faculties, using my five senses, my imagination, my intellect, my, you know, like, these are real questions that you should be thinking about. How do I know things? What do I know? So getting back to our questions, and again, like, this is a lot to think about, a lot to deal with, but the question is like this. What did Yetzias Mitzrayim provide? What type of knowledge? What did Ma'an Torah provide? And if Yetzias Mitzrayim was enough, why do we need Ma'an Torah? If Yetzias Mitzrayim isn't enough, why did Hashem say that Yetzias Mitzrayim is enough and I'm going to reveal myself to Klal Yisrael into the Mitzrayim? And the Mitzrayim said that it was enough. That's Be'elokimhi. So we need to really try to understand what's going on here. And if Ma'an Torah can also be questioned because everything can be questioned, there's no such thing as 100% proof, then how is Ma'an Torah really better than Yetzias Mitzrayim? It's all, like, every single step of this entire equation needs to really be thought out. And we need to really, what I want to do is I want to develop something extremely powerful. And to do so, I really want to delve into what Ma'an Torah really provided. What was the fundamental difference about Ma'an Torah that did something that Yetzias Mitzrayim simply couldn't? And once again, the question, what did Yetzias Mitzrayim do? So the simple answer of why Ma'an Torah is better is that it was a better proof of Hashem's existence, or it was to prevent a Navi Sheker, as we explained about the Ramban, and the Ramban actually says this too. But there's a much deeper answer here. And the deeper answer is that Ma'an Torah introduced a different type of knowledge. What does that mean? It sounds great, but what does that mean? So what I want to develop now is a realm of deep Jewish thought which opens up an entire realm, meaning every single deep shir is connected to this idea. When we talk about machshava, when we talk about deep Torah thought, this is the quintessential, this is the essential fundamental idea we're talking about. And the concept is like this. The concept is that there's a different type of knowledge. A knowledge that is different than rational knowledge. And that different knowledge is called das, it's called experiential knowledge, it's called deeper internal intrinsic knowledge. And we're going to try to understand what this is. Well, what is this type of knowledge? But to do so, I want to delve a little deeper into the limits of rational knowledge of Hashem. Because we began to develop this idea that everything can be questioned. There's no such thing as something that's 100%. But there are some limitations of rational knowledge. Number one, rational knowledge is external. So the way that you know something rational is by knowing that it exists, you know about it. Your connection with it is limited, though. Because if you know through rational proofs that Hashem exists, let's say, and the world's so beautiful, so I know Hashem must exist. Or, beautiful, like, well, it's organized, it's designed. Or everything must have a root, so Hashem must be the ultimate root of existence. That tells you Hashem exists, but all it does is tell you he exists. It doesn't tell you anything about Hashem. You have no kesher, no relationship with Hashem. You don't really have any, there's nothing more than external knowledge that Hashem exists. And you don't have a relationship, you don't know anything really about him, you don't know, there's no way to have a kesher with him. You just know that he exists. That's it. And besides for it being external knowledge, it's the fact that rational knowledge itself breaks down. It's limited. Mathematics, philosophy, it always eventually breaks down to a certain extent. And the same thing, and I'm not going to get into it now, but Zeno's paradox, the concept of time mathematically breaks down. I'll just briefly share with you. Basically, the paradox is that mathematically, there's an infinite amount of points between any two points. So there's an infinite amount of points between my two fingers. And mathematically, because there's an infinite amount of points, every time I go, let's say, halfway, I should always be able to go halfway closer to these fingers. Meaning, these fingers should never touch, because if there's an infinite number of points between them, then I can always get halfway closer, and yet my finger can pass the other one. Which doesn't make sense, because mathematically, there should not be movement. Mathematically, one thing should never be able to pass another thing, and that's why Zeno, his famous paradox, says that time just doesn't make any sense. Movement doesn't make any sense. And mathematically, the concept of the present, there's no such thing. The present really shouldn't exist because it's the infinitesimal point between the past and the future. So where is it? If you can always get infinitely closer, meaning if this is the past and this is the present and this is the future, and this point in the middle is the present, you can always get infinitely closer. Once again, we're not going to really get into its mathematics, but basically the present is a paradox. But I want to just go with, I know that these are abstract ideas, complex ideas, but I want to delve a little deeper into the limitations of rational knowledge. Because in order to relate to how experiential knowledge, how das, how internal, intrinsic knowledge is superior, you need to really understand how reason breaks down. And what I want to do is I want to give you some thought examples of where you can really see this play out. But just before we do, I want to briefly just explain that experiential knowledge, das, is something you know intrinsically deep within yourself without the need for rational proofs. And it's something that transcends reason or logic. It's something which, it's not faith or belief, it's a higher form of knowledge. And the reason why I want to go back to the introductory story I gave you of the alien with the different forms of knowing chocolate. And remember that when he heard about it, that was external knowledge. And then he saw it. And he felt it, he touched it. But when he tasted it, it was so real, something so experiential. And even to a certain extent, like each of those are higher forms of knowledge. And obviously that's not experiential knowledge, it's not das, but that's just showing you levels of knowing something, becoming more intimate, more internal, more intrinsic. But when we talk about das, when we talk about internal, deeper experiential knowledge of Hashem, we're talking about something so deep and so fundamental. And I want to give you some examples of das, of intrinsic internal knowledge, so you start to understand the difference between das and external rational knowledge. So the first example I like to give is, how do you know that you're awake right now? If you are. I hope you are. How do you know you're awake right now? And the reason why this is a great question is because, first of all, you have no proof you're awake right now. There's no such thing as a rational proof. And the reason why there's no such thing as a rational proof is that when you're asleep and dreaming, you think you're awake. So how do you know you're not dreaming right now? Listening to this, you know, this great chair. How do you know you're not dreaming right now? You don't. There's no way of you getting outside of yourself to do a test to know whether or not you're awake right now. The reason you know you're awake right now is that you know. There is no way to give a rational proof. And Descartes was famous for saying, how do you know that you exist? And there's a philosophy press, famous story of a philosophy professor who gave a whole lecture on how we have no philosophical way of proving that you exist, because you can't really have a control. You can't get outside of yourself to prove whether or not you exist. So he basically left off the lecture saying that we have no proof whether or not we exist. And one of the students came over to the professor really troubled, and he said, Professor, do I exist? Do I exist? Can you please give me a proof that I exist? And the professor said, who wishes to know? Now, that's a very famous, just mean philosophy joke, because he basically played on the guy's philosophical convictions. But the idea is that there's no way of proving that you exist. Now, Descartes's famous for saying, I think, therefore I am. And that's his proof for existence. What that really means is that I am the one who is asking the question whether or not I exist. And that is my proof that I exist, because I am the questioner. Which really just means that I experience myself existing. I know I exist. I can't rationally prove it, but the experience of myself existing and being able to contemplate my own existence itself is my personal experiential internal das, my internal proof, my internal experience that I exist. And I will say that, especially for those that are not philosophically inclined, and for those who are philosophically inclined, experience is often confused with emotion. And when we talk about experience, we're not talking about emotional proof. We're not talking about what this means to you, whether it's, whether you connect with it. That's something entirely different that we can discuss, you know, the pros and cons of that type of idea a different time. But when we talk about experiential knowledge, we're talking about something absolutely fundamentally deep. And just so you understand, if you really analyze any genuinely deep philosophical Torah source, the end point of the philosophical inquiry will always take you to this higher level of das and experience. And that, and any like real deep, true Torah source will have that which transcends reason. Now, the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim is a famous historical question. If you actually look at the end of Mor Nevuchim, he does actually talk about something beyond reason, which, for those of you who know what I'm talking about, who know that the Mor Nevuchim is a famous work that is very philosophical. And the question many people ask historically is whether or not the Mor Nevuchim believes that the ultimate truth is rational or actually goes higher to something beyond reason, and, you know, Nevuah as being something beyond reason. But that's something which really requires so much analysis and something which we're not going to go into right now. But that's why there were many who questioned the validity and the significance of the Mor Nevuchim as a Jewish work, only because of the questions that surround it. And for those of you who are familiar with this or have learned Mor Nevuchim, you know exactly what I'm talking about. For those of you who don't, this is a very famous question. So I want to just give you a couple other examples of cases where reason itself is not enough. You need something beyond reason. So the next example I want to go into is the knowledge of free will. So modern science, modern philosophy questions the nature of free will. Do you have free will? Or is everything determined? Determinism. Is there, basically, without getting into the question of Hashem's foreknowledge, the question of whether or not we have free will is now under scientific attack. So scientifically, it's not clear whether or not we have free will. But how do you know you have free will? Because you experience the struggle back and forth when you're going through a serious spiritual or a moral dilemma. You're debating whether or not to do something that you know is wrong. And you go through this genuine internal struggle. You know that you're in the control seat making the decision. So scientifically and philosophically, there might be some questions, some debates, but free will, Bechira Chafshis, is something that you experience so deeply within the very core of your inner self that this form of das is something which is far superior to rational knowledge. And another example is, and this is something which we're going to delve into in a few minutes, is the limitations of science. How do you know that your life has meaning? It's something so core and intrinsic to being a human being is that we know we're here for a reason. We know that our life is meaningful and purposeful. But scientifically and historically, they'll want to tell you that you're just an advanced monkey or an advanced chimpanzee, evolution. You're not built B'Tselem Elokim. Your life has no reason, but no meaning, no purpose. But you know deep within the core of your inner self that your life has meaning, that you're here for a purpose, that you're unique, that you can create something extraordinary to contribute to the world no one else can. But there's no scientific proof for that. There's no rational proof for that. That's something you know deep within yourself. And I mean, very related. How do you know that you're a human being and not just an advanced chimpanzee? Meaning, how do you know that you have a neshama, that you're a spiritual being, that you can connect to the transcendent? How do you know? I mean, these are things that rationally and scientifically, there's no proof for them, but we know deep within the very core of your being. And another example is, how do you know that there's something called morality? How do you know that there's something intrinsic right or wrong? I mean, this is at the heart and core of the problem of the Western world, is that if this world is really just a random result of the Big Bang, and we're just advanced chimpanzees, there's nothing right or wrong about anything. I mean, when a monkey steals a banana from another monkey, you might laugh. You don't say, like, that's an evil monkey, a corrupt monkey doing something mean. It's just trying to survive. When a lion kills a gazelle and eats it, do you say, that's horrible? How can he do that? No, you say the lion's eating. Well, that's just, you know, animal nature. But if we're advanced animals, then when we do things like that, when a human being steals or kills someone, it's trying to survive. It's doing what he needs to do. It's an advanced monkey. So where does morality come into play? There is no morality. The reason why you can't kill and why you can't do those things is just a basic agreement, the societal. There's different ways of discussing it, but we're not going to get into the history of it. But it's a social contract. You basically agree not to do these things with each other, and police will enforce it so that you can have a harmonious society where people aren't scared of getting killed at night. But it's not because it's really wrong. And this is, we're not going to get into it right now, but this was the heart and core of the machlokas between Yaakov and Esav, of whether things are intrinsic or practical. And you know, we've given shiur on this before. It's a fantastic, fascinating, and deep topic. Is there any objective morality, or are these things conventions? And, I mean, I'll give you one beautiful example. You ever think, why did Esav sell the Bechorah and then basically try to take it right back? But if Esav believed that there is no such thing as, you know, right or wrong, or ownership for that matter, everything is just a convention, then of course he didn't sell it to Yaakov. He sell it, steal it right back. There's no such thing as mine or yours or right or wrong. It's just based off of dominance and koach. You know, the mightiest, the dominant will survive. And morality, you know, without getting into Nietzsche's famous critique of Western morality, religious morality, how it's basically a creation of religion to make those who are mighty feel weak and those who are weak feel mighty. But the idea is that morality is fake and that there's no such thing. But if you're a Jew, if you're a human being for that matter, you feel this intrinsic sense of what's right and wrong. And that conscience is not just an evolutionary matter. It's because you're connected to your Tzelem Elokim, your Chelek Elokamal. You know what's wrong and what's right. You know the difference. And when you do what's wrong, you feel that I just betrayed myself. And not only did I betray Hashem, I betrayed who I'm supposed to be. That's not evolution. That's you're tapping into your core inner existential self. That's das. That's real knowledge. And is there any rational proof for what's right and wrong? The debate, maybe not. But you know it deep within yourself. And once you understand this idea, the distinction between rational knowledge and internal intrinsic knowledge, you see the entire world differently. Your eyes open up quite literally and figuratively because you start to see things through a spiritual lens. I mean, think about it. Love, marriage. There's no scientific or rational proof that love is real, that beauty is real. Maybe it's just something that we think is real, but it's not. But of course there's no rational proof. Love, oneness, connection, something real, something intrinsic, something internal, das, this inner sense of real oneness, that's something that can't be proven. It's not scientific. It's not rational. It's internal. It's intrinsic. It's core. It's something that you experience so deeply within yourself. If you have ever experienced genuine love, if you have ever experienced, you know, seen something genuinely beautiful, you don't need a rational proof for it. And once again, this is not emotional. This is not something that, like, I believe. I have a belief. No. You know, when it comes to certain things, having a belief or just emotionally deciding, like, that is a very inferior form of knowledge. Rational knowledge is superior to that. But experiential knowledge, deeper knowledge, internal knowledge, das, which I'm sure some of you, by the way, are somewhat confused because it is esoteric. It is transcendent. It is hard to put your finger on. What is this? But that type of knowledge is so far superior to rational knowledge because it is the heart, root, and core of all other knowledge. And this really gets back into what we talked about for Immanuel Kant before, which really we've said the Jewish sources have been talking about this for thousands of years. The fact that there is something spiritual that transcends your five senses, the fact that there is a spiritual core and heart of reality that is beyond the surface of the physical, there's no rational proof to that. I mean, I will actually say that science is getting closer. Quantum physics and quantum science is getting closer to the spiritual core of reality. The fact that there is a consciousness, there's a consciousness that is at the heart and core and root of the physical reality. There are scientists that are starting to become very, very religious the deeper they go into quantum physics and quantum science because they're starting to realize that the quantum core of reality is spiritual. It is transcendent. It's ethereal. It's a consciousness. we can't really get into that right now. But what are we trying to develop here? And this is so core. There is that which transcends scientific rational knowledge. And one of the greatest ways of thinking of this is that many people, they think scientific knowledge is important. It is. Science is extraordinary. It's fascinating. It's amazing. And it's essential. But the root and core of all physical wisdom is rooted in spiritualism. And the reason for this is because Estakel Bereisa Vor Alma, Kodesh Baruch Hu, looked in the Torah and used the Torah to create the physical world. The physical world is an expression of the spiritual, which means that all physical science and physical wisdom stems from spiritual science and spiritual wisdom. Of course you can learn physical wisdom, but the heart and core and the root of physical wisdom is spiritual wisdom, is the Torah. That's why Avraham looked into the physical world and was able to ascertain and come to spiritual truth. He used the physical to source it back to the spiritual. Shlomo HaMelech, he had the Torah. Hashem granted him all of Chachmas Torah. He was able to use Chachmas HaTorah, the wisdom of Torah, to understand all of physical wisdom, understand the entire physical world. You can go either way because the two are connected. Obviously, the ideal and the core is to go top down. The Torah is the root and the core. So there, you know, there's a whole discussion. Avraham obviously got a very high level of understanding, but the Torah is the absolute core and the physical wisdom is the expression. So science can only tell you the what. Science can only tell you what exists in the physical world, that is. Can't tell you why. So, you know, there are so many things that science cannot tell you. So science can't tell you why you're born. It can't tell you the purpose of your life. It can't tell you, you know, where you came from. Where were you before you were born into this physical world? And where you're going to go after you die and leave this physical world? Science, it can't really explain the nature of morality, of good and evil. It can't explain the concept of love. It can't explain, you know, why are there males and females in the world? Why do you have to have a male and female to create a child? Well, why? So, I mean, we could, and I've given it before, the really deep, essential, spiritual concepts of male and female. The Maharal goes deep into this idea, and why Hashem created the world through the concepts of male and female. And why do we refer to Hashem as male? All of these ideas are fundamental, but science can't tell you where laws come from. Well, why are there any objective laws of both the physical world? Why are those the physical laws of science? And also laws that we use in our, you know, our democracy. Why are those laws? Look, where does everything in the world come from? The why behind everything, you can only really find a why within spirituality, within Torah. And I mean, one last example I can give is why is something beautiful if it's beautiful? Why is that beautiful? Why do we think, if we agree something is beautiful, why? So these things are beyond reason, beyond science, they're even beyond words. And, you know, I'll just give you one great, we can really go into it later, but one great way to really show the distinction between rational knowledge and intrinsic internal knowledge is, can you put it into words? I can go into this a little bit later, but can you describe in words? So Rav Chaim is famous for saying that when it comes to learning Gemara, if you cannot put it into words, you don't know it. And the reason is because learning Gemara b'yin, if you really learn a sugya, open up a Gemara and learn a sugya b'kiyus or b'yin, if you really understand it, you can put it into words. You can describe it. You can say it back in your own words. When it comes to real deeper wisdom, like what does it mean to experience existence? What does it mean to experience that you exist? You can't describe that. It's beyond words. Any words you use to describe it, or like, how do you know you exist? I know. Can you describe it? No. These things are beyond words. And any deep, intrinsic, real form of knowledge you know so deeply within yourself that you can't really put into words. And you can actually see this. If you ever experience something extraordinary in your own life, you see like, wow. We're like, oh. Why? Because it's so amazing that to put it into words and describe it, it belittles what it actually is. There's no words. You're really just saying like, I have no words to describe this. And that is a sign of some internal, deeper, true experience. And it's not foolproof, but the idea is that when you know something so deeply, the Torah idea, which is a deep idea, not just, you know, something, not just something simple, but something profound and deep, you know it so deeply within yourself, but you can't really describe, you can't really give it over in your own words. It's not because you don't know, it's because you do know it. And it's because you know it so deeply that it can't exist in the realm of limitation, the realm of words. And the paradox of Torah is that that type of wisdom was also given in the form of words. And the Maharal says something amazing. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu, his lisp, came not because he had a lack of knowledge, but because he was so deeply connected to that which is transcendent that he couldn't formulate finite words. He couldn't speak. But the paradox is that the miracle is that once Hashem created the Torah, which is a paradox of the infinite being expressed in finite words, it says, Vaydaber Moshe, that Dvarim, Moshe spoke, Moshe was able to now speak in words, perfectly fine, once that paradox occurred. Because Moshe is Torah, Torah is Moshe. So once the Torah was given over, once the infinite, the Das, and the, once the Ratzon Hashem and the Chachmas Hashem was given over into the finite words of Torah, Shebek Tzav, then Moshe was also able to express and connect the infinite to the finite. That was the paradox. But the idea here is so fundamental that rational knowledge is limited and experiential knowledge is deeper. So what's the point of all this? Why are we going into this? Because the Ramchal in Das Tunos said this is the answer, this is the distinction between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah. Why? Yetzias Mitzrayim was a rational proof. It was good enough. Proof that Hashem existed. Hashem revealed himself to the world. He's all powerful. He exists in Hashkacha Pratis. There's reward and punishment. But it was an external proof. We didn't know anything about Hashem. We didn't experience Hashem. We didn't come to know Hashem. There's no relationship with Hashem. But, and because of that, it was indirect. It was limited. So from the miracles, the Ramban says, that's how Hashem revealed the Ikar Emunah. We know Hashem exists. We know so many things about Hashem, but in a limited way. It wasn't the ultimate form of knowing Hashem. What's the ultimate form? That was Matan Torah. Because Yetzias Mitzrayim, that was good enough. That was good enough proof. That was a rational proof. But Matan Torah was experiential proof. We experienced Hashem. What was the Matan Torah experience? We can give a whole shiur on this when we should, and we hopefully will, and we have in the past. But what was Matan Torah? And because this is a part of a much larger shiur, we can't go deep, deep, deep into this, because that would really require at least a half hour. But Matan Torah was an experience of Hashem himself. If you think about what Matan Torah was, the reason why Klal Yisrael died by the first two Dibros is because it was a completely spiritual experience. So our souls left our bodies because our bodies couldn't handle it. It says Roem Esakolos, that Klal Yisrael saw sounds. You can't see sounds. Why do we see sounds by Har Sinai? Because the Matan Torah experience was a taste of Olam Haba. One way to think of it is that like this world is a place of movement, right? I can move my hands. I move through time. It's a place where you can grow and become. You can create yourself. Olam Haba is where you experience everything you become. It's static. Roim Esakolos, sounds you hear through process. Seeing, you see all at once. Seeing sounds means that the entire process of reality, the physical world, was enveloped in the experience of Olam Haba. We had a taste of Olam Haba. I mean, Shabbos, that's the same idea. Shabbos is you stop the creative process and you experience, it's me'in Olam Haba, the Gemara says. The Gemara says that it's a taste of Olam Haba. It's Gemara Bracha, Ostaf, Nun Zayin. It's Shabbos is me'in Olam Haba. It's a taste of Olam Haba. Small taste, 1/60th. You know, just a little taste. More than that, it's bittle. Less than that, it's bittle. It's just a little taste of Olam Haba. So, if you think about it, this idea of Matan Torah experience was something that was so transcendent. And we're not talking about whether it was a better proof quantitatively. It's like 99%, 100%. Let's say Yetzias Mitzrayim was 100% rational proof. Matan Torah was a qualitatively different proof. It wasn't a level of proof. It was the quality of the knowledge. We experienced Hashem. We met Hashem. We married Hashem. It was mamish a marriage. Har Sinai was the canopy. It was the chuppah. And we talk about Shir Hashirim. We do like, the idea of marrying Hashem, being in a love relationship with Hashem. That's what being a Jew is. That's what we experienced at Har Sinai. And this was such a deeper form of knowledge than Yetzias Mitzrayim. And you can think of it as Yetzias Mitzrayim as we were engaged to marry Hashem, but Matan Torah was the actual marriage. And I guess another mashal that you can use if you want to think about this is Yetzias Mitzrayim is like receiving letters from Hashem. So we know Hashem exists, but we've never met him. In Matan Torah, we finally met Hashem. We met Hashem in the most intimate way, and we married him. And we committed our lives to him. And if you think about it, Matan Torah was the exclusive relationship between us and Hashem. It's where Klal Yisrael, where we entered into a unique relationship with Hashem. The Makos by Yitzias Mitzrayim, that was universal. Everyone saw those. Matan Torah was something very personal and unique, something that was unique to us. We transformed into Klal Yisrael who married HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's possible that this is also pshat in the Rambam, because he says Yesh B'li B'dofi, that there is doubt by Yitzias Mitzrayim, but what's the doubt? The doubt is not the level of proof, but it's the nature of the knowledge, it's the quality of the proof. And that's why he says that if you actually look inside, he says that, you know, other types of knowledge, it fades. Like rational knowledge, it's not internal, it's not deep, it's not something experiential, so it fades. But Matan Torah is something that never fades, because something you experience is something so much more real. Rational knowledge, it fades. But, you know, we can go much deeper into this. The type of knowledge, let's hold off on this, because we'll talk about this in a few minutes, but it fades not because you think it's no longer good proof, but it's not something that deeply, deeply affects you in terms of your level of consciousness, in terms of who you are and how you live your life. Rational knowledge is never good enough. You need something that becomes part of you, becomes intrinsic to you, becomes so connected to you. You don't learn Torah intellectually, you learn Torah to become Torah, to become one with Hashem. And that's a different level of knowledge. So let's delve into this for just a few minutes, because it really is important. So rational knowledge, it's not just that it falls apart, it's that rational knowledge, it uses, I'm trying to think about how to put this into words, because rationally both can be doubted. Rational knowledge and experiential knowledge can be doubted. So we're not talking about the level of proof, we're talking about the quality of the knowledge. Rational knowledge, you use your intellect, you use logic, you use your rational faculties. It's bina, it's midas bina. And you use calculations, use proofs, it's incontrovertible, it's demonstrable. You become like a calculator or a machine with these types of proofs. But inner experience, inner knowledge, the knowledge binds to, it becomes part of you, you become part of it. There's no way of disconnecting yourself from the knowledge, because it has become you and you have become the knowledge. It becomes part of your consciousness. And I mean, part of this was, like we just said, can you describe it into words? You can't describe it in words, because it's so beyond words, it's so much a part of you. But there's another level here, really gets back to the Chet of Adam HaRishon, but all sin stems from rational knowledge. When something is das, when something is deeply internal to you, when you know something so deep that it becomes part and parcel of your identity and your existence, you will never, ever, ever mess up. You only mess up when you can block, because what is sin? Sin is blocking out intellectual, rational knowledge to basically engage in whatever you're not supposed to be doing. That can only happen when the knowledge is something that can be blocked out, something rational that can be pushed aside. But when something is so internal, so deep, so intrinsic to who you are, you can't block it out. So, for example, if you knew that when you ate or did whatever it is, or were about to engage in a sin, that you were going to cease to exist, of course you wouldn't do it. But what you can do, with the amazing thing about being human, is you can block out aspects of your knowledge to engage in things that you know you shouldn't do, but because you want to do it. You have a different ratzon. You have a ratzon to be your best self. You have a ratzon to engage in not your best behavior. And you can cloud out your higher ratzon. You can cloud your higher self to engage in this. That's only because it's rational. It's the wrong type of knowledge. If you can develop and build this correct knowledge, which is this higher internal das, that's how you overcome your yetzer hara. But when you get to the point where it's so intrinsic and so a part of you that there's no way that you can mess up on it. And I'm not going to go deeper into this, because I want to get back to our main question. But this is the heart and core of what it means to be a Jew. It's building this inner knowledge of self, building this inner chachmas haTorah, building this inner connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's developing this internal world, this internal mind, this inner das, a relationship, a marriage without inner das, a marriage without this inner world, this inner shared mind and self, this inner shared space, it is not a genuine marriage, and it will not be a genuine marriage. I'm not saying it will fall apart. I'm saying that that's not what a marriage could and should be. If you want to build a real marriage, a real relationship, it has to be one where there is such a genuine, deep, internal das connection, where you come to know each other and yourselves in infinitely deeper ways, always. Like, every single day, you're learning more about each other and yourselves and Hashem, and it's this infinite development of self and shared self, where you don't lose yourself, but find a deeper form of yourself within this building a shared self with each other. And it's something that you're building and creating this oneness of self, but not losing yourself, but always redeveloping and recommitting to developing a higher form of your individual selves, and then investing that into your shared self. And then that shared self allows you to become an even better version of your individual self. And then it's this infinite relationship, but it's rooted in das. It's rooted in inner knowledge and inner awareness and inner connection and inner relationship. And many, many, many relationships, many friendships, but unfortunately many marriages are surface. You don't know each other, and part of it is because you don't know yourself. The first step of building a true, amazing relationship is building a true, amazing relationship with yourself. Then you can expand and build a true, amazing relationship with, you know, your spouse, your wife, your husband, with Kadosh Baruch Hu, with Klal Yisrael, with your friends. But it all starts with building an internal deep das within yourself. And that's the heart and core of learning deep Torah, is finding and discovering your own inner das, your own inner self, really coming in touch with a higher level of consciousness, of awareness. And that's the heart and core of Talmud Torah. And Matan Torah was that marriage with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's where it was a marriage of consciousness with Hashem. It's where we melted into this deep existential oneness, where we became a part of reality itself in the deepest way possible. And that's the deeper form of why our neshamas left our bodies for the first two divrusas. We literally were, you know, sucked into reality, into just external existential connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's really what Das is. It's this form of connection. It's why, you know, it talks about Adam and Chava, when it talks about their intimate relationship, it says Das, because that's what real marriage is. That's what real connection is. Das is not just knowledge. It's knowledge where it synthesizes into a oneness, into a real deep connection. So I just want to briefly develop one point, then we'll go back to our original questions. So this one point I want to develop is that, okay, but Mount Torah is so extraordinary, it's so great, but we weren't there. So how do we develop it? So we mentioned that we have a Masorah. So once again, that Masorah is great. The Ramban talks about this. That's what really the purpose of the Seder Night is, to re-tap into what we experienced at Mount Torah. And that's really our entire goal of learning Torah, and our entire goal of life is to re-tap into the Mount Torah experience and rebuild our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to strengthen and enhance and build that relationship. And it's a relationship of deep inner consciousness, of deep meditation, of being motivated to constantly focus on it. And you live your life based on what you think about and based on where your focus is. So if your focus is on building a relationship with Hashem, that's where everything in your life will go. And that, I mean, one of the famous questions is, you know, Hashem's not revealing himself in the world anymore. Hashem's not speaking anymore. But Hashem never stopped talking. Everything in the entire world is a form of communication. Everything, it's like when you look at someone and you see their facial language, their facial expressions, their body language, that's also a form of communication. Hashem stopped openly speaking to us. We talked about that, where there was a transition in history, Nevuah stopped, miracles stopped, but now we have to learn to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu within the hidden realms of nature, within the events that happen to us, and that is how Hashem communicates to us, based on everything within the revealed world of phenomena. And what are we trying to tap into? What are we trying to tap into? So remember, the Shlach Kodesh says that we were at Har Sinai. We know what at root we're trying to experience. And it's at the root of our very unconscious, subconscious self. And all of life is about delving into Talmud Torah, delving into Torah life, delving into the inner wisdom of what it means to be a Jew, and constantly expanding our sense of self and improving and enhancing and expanding our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and rebuilding that Matan Torah experience. But now we get back to our foundational question that we began with, which is that if Matan Torah is the core and ikkar of life, it's the gateway into truth, it's the gateway into higher experience, it's where we met HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's where we married HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that all of life is really using Matan Torah, we receive the Torah, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon Chachma, and all of life is using the Torah as the medium of reconnecting to that relationship of that oneness with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then why isn't our entire Mesorah rooted into Zeichel Matan Torah? Why is everything Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim? Because remember, we said that the Yetzias Mitzrayim was good enough. It's good enough for the Mitzrayim, it's also good enough for Klai Yisrael, but it was qualitatively not good enough. Matan Torah was qualitatively, it was experiencing an inner das, inner connection, inner relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's where we married HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So why isn't everything in our Mesorah Zecher L'Matan Torah? So we said that there's, you know, it could be one practical answer. Practical answer is that, and if you want to really think of it this way, one practical answer is that it was good enough for the Mitzrayim, but it wasn't good enough for us. So we mentioned already that it's a good answer. It's a practical answer. For Yetzias, for the Mitzrayim, for the rest of the world, Yetzias Mitzrayim was good enough, but for Klai Yisrael, we have this greater relationship. But why is everything in our Mesorah going to be Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim? That says that Yetzias Mitzrayim is great, so you can say that maybe it's because our job in life is to be an Ohel HaGoyim, is to reveal truth to the world, and therefore we root ourselves back in that universal revelation because we take Matan Torah and we reveal, you know, in a certain sense, what it means to be a Jew to the world. Okay, so that's a good answer. But the Ramban himself even says that all of life is about keeping the experience of Matan Torah with you. That you should never forget, we're going to delve a little bit into this soon, but you should never forget the experience of Matan Torah. It's one of the six Zechiras, you should never forget Matan Torah. So if we should never forget Matan Torah, why are we always remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim? We should always remember Matan Torah. So what I want to do is I want to develop six deep answers. And I'm not going to say one answer is the answer. We're going to develop. I'm trying to build a framework of how to really engage in this. Because if you really tapped into everything we've developed so far, the question should be stronger now. Matan Torah was everything. It was literally everything. It was the pinnacle, it was the highlight, it was the crescendo, it was everything that we're trying to accomplish in life. It was the ultimate experience of Olam Haba, of Hashem Himself, Matan Torah, Kabbalah Satorah. Why is everything Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim then? Matan Torah seems to be a far superior root of our Mesorah. So one approach is, like we began to say before, is that Yetzias Mitzrayim is still the root of our Ikar Yemuna. The Ramban says that all of our Ikar Yemuna come from Yetzias Mitzrayim. Hashem exists, Hashem is all powerful, Hashkachah Pratis, reward and punishment. So because these are such important principles, we root our Mesorah back to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, so it's a good answer. Once again, the question still remains though. Okay, that's great, that was the core of our Ikar Emunah, but still, wasn't Matan Torah far superior? Wasn't that also far more important? But received the Torah, shouldn't that still be the heart and core of our Mesorah, where we always root ourselves back to? So it's a good answer. So far we have, you know, Klai Yisrael versus the rest of the world, we go back to the universal revelation, or you can say that it's the Ikar Emunah, we go back to where the Ikar Emunah rooted from. But we can still try to develop a couple other answers that expand our framework and build a little bit of a deeper outlook on this topic. So another possibility is that Yetzias Mitzrayim was the root and birth of Klal Yisrael. So it's true Matan Torah was far superior in a certain sense, but we go back to our root, back to our birth. And if you think about it, the mitzvah of Chodesh Hazeh, that was the mitzvah of the new month, was also the renewal of Klal Yisrael as a klal, as a tzibor. The Karban Pesach, the Maharal says, is all the details of the Karban Pesach was about oneness, because I was creating the oneness of Klal Yisrael. So it's a lamb that's 1 year old. It has to be one piece, even with one chabura, one tzibor, one community. You have to be designated beforehand. It was eaten at one night, and they ate the one lamb, and it had to be roasted, not cooked, because when you cook it or boil it, it falls apart. But roasting it makes it, you know, kind of like makes the meat become more one piece. And you also have to eat it at one night. You can't have any nosar. And lots of other details of oneness. But the Maharal says all these details of oneness were to create the oneness of Klai Yisrael, because of the birth of Klai Yisrael that night. So you can say that true, Ma'an Torah was a far superior proof and revelation of Hashem, but this was the root of Klai Yisrael. And all of life is going back to the root. That's what Chachmah is, going back to the root. Where was the root? Where was our birth? That was Yetzias Mitzrayim. That was the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And our goal is Ma'an Torah. We're not questioning that. That was Anochi Hashem. I am Hashem. That was Hashem revealing himself in a more, much more intimate way. But what we do is we go back to the root. Because the root, in a certain sense, is even more fundamental. Because it's where everything stemmed from. It was the starting point. So therefore, we go back to the root. So true Ma'an Torah was a far superior experience qualitatively. But in terms of how we identify the root of Klai Yisrael, that goes back to Yetzias Mitzrayim. And you can even think of it in a deeper way. We only became Klai Yisrael because of Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is a great question that people ask. Why are we so happy in Seder night to say Pesach, we celebrate that we left Mitzrayim? HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent us into Mitzrayim. He tells Avram, I'm sending I'm going to send your children into slavery. Then he takes us out. Why are we so happy? It's like someone puts you in jail and then after a week takes you out. Do you thank him? You say, no, why did you put me in jail in the first place? I didn't do anything. So why do we have to go into Mitzrayim? So this is a very deep topic. I can give a whole shiur on this, but without getting to all different nekudos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was only able to create us as Klai Yisrael because we went into Mitzrayim. Many different reasons, many different details, but just one really important is the idea of Shefiras HaKelim, the idea of we went into Mitzrayim to basically shatter ourselves in terms of identity so that we can literally, from the bottom up, from the core, from the starting point, point one, create ourselves as a tzibur, as a klal. So yes, we were, you know, 70 great individuals, but we became an actual unified spiritual metaphysical tzibur, a klal, by going into the process of Shibud Mitzrayim and Yetzias Mitzrayim. So part of the whole reason why we became Klai Yisrael was only because of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and only because of the entire process. So Yetzias Mitzrayim was the root of us becoming Klai Yisrael. And I want to take this actually a step further. Because not only do we become Klai Yisrael, but there's something really, and we've given shiurim on this before, we're going to briefly just go over for like 1 or 2 minutes, we didn't just become a nation. We became a nation that is spiritually, metaphysically, and halachically connected to the spiritual world. In the sense that we became a cosmic nation. Not just a group of people together who are committed to a unified goal. We became a spiritual people. Meaning, spiritually became interconnected as a unified people who is able to affect reality, affect the spiritual world. That was, like if you think about it, number one, Yetzias Mitzrayim allowed us to transcend the limitations of Mitzrayim. So without getting into all the different spiritual concepts of where Mitzrayim corrupts reality, Yetzias Mitzrayim was us transcending that as a nation. So all the different aspects of Mitzrayim, so for example, they don't daven Tashem, they have the Nile, we are connected to Kadosh Baruch Hu through Ratzon, we daven Tashem, Mitzrayim is Mitzar Yam, all these different ideas of Ervas Haaretz, all the different problems of where Mitzrayim goes wrong, of Mispar, of being limited within the finite realm of reality. Like, once again, for those of you who are familiar with these ideas, you know exactly what I'm talking about. For those of you who don't, there's a whole realm of Torah thought on what Mitzrayim represents. So Klai Yisrael, without getting into all the details, transcended all the problems of what Mitzrayim represents. We also transcended time. That was the concept of matzah, where we were able to exist on a plane that transcends the limitations of time and space. So matzah takes up the minimum amount of time and space. And we were able to build a transcendent root, which transcended time and space. Obviously, then we can come back down and use time and space, but our transcendent root was built off of that night of leaving Mitzrayim, Bechipa Zone. And to take it a step further, the Chazal say that we transform matzah into mitzvah, adding a vav, which means that matzah is something, without getting into all the details, is really a whole shiur, but our ability to affect the spiritual world, to be connected to Hashem, was rooted in Yetzias Mitzrayim, where we added a vav to matzah, which became mitzvah. Which, the whole concept, what does that mean? It means that vav is a connecting letter. You put a vav, it's a hook. Vav means a hook, but vav, you put a beginning of a word to say and, you connect two ideas. Vav in matzah connects matzah to mitzvah, which is the idea of we're able to now affect the spiritual world through mitzvahs. I'm not going to get into the whole idea, but it transformed us into a nation that not only listens to Hashem's will, but is able to connect to Hashem through mitzvahs. Because what is mitzvah comes? The Maharal says that mitzvah comes through tzavta, which means connection. So we don't listen to Hashem only because he commanded, like an army officer, you know, giving drills and giving orders. Obviously, we listen to Hashem because he is the source of the ultimate truth. He is the ultimate truth, and he tells us what to do. But not only from a level of command to obeying a command, but also in the form of tzavta, which is connection, building a relationship, building a connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, which obviously the ultimate experience of that was Matan Torah, but the root of that comes from Yetzias Mitzrayim. So this is another answer, which is that we go back to the root. The root of Klai Yisrael is Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's basically why we have Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. Even though Matan Torah was a superior experience of our connection with Hashem, we go back to the root. But there's a deeper way of thinking of this as well, which is that Yetzias Mitzrayim includes Matan Torah within it. So far we basically said Yetzias Mitzrayim has something Matan Torah doesn't have. Right? We said that either it's universal, it's for everyone, or we said that it's the Ikari Amuna, or we also gave another answer, which is that it was the root of Klai Yisrael, not just like historically the root, but the fundamental root where we became a transcendent spiritual nation. But there's another way, and this is a little bit of a deeper, more fundamental answer. We're not saying that it's different than Matan Torah or better than Matan Torah. We're saying it includes Matan Torah within it. Why? And this is also a deep machshava principle, which is that Matan Torah didn't just come after Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? The phrase Yetzias Mitzrayim includes the story of Matan Torah. Yetzias Mitzrayim is the journey from Mitzrayim to Matan Torah, but it's not that Matan Torah came after; it's that it's a continuation of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And if you think of it like that, first of all, within spirituality, I said that I mentioned this a little earlier, Chachma, you always go back to the root. Why? Because the root includes the expression. So Matan Torah didn't just chronologically come after Yetzias Mitzrayim, it is rooted within Yetzias Mitzrayim, meaning that Matan Torah is an expression of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but that means that it's contained within Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's like you have a tree comes from a seed. So if you have, let's say, a giant trunk and a seed, the giant trunk is really contained within that seed. And everything in that tree is contained within that seed. Our entire story as a Jewish people is an expression and continuation of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's why Kolam Arba L'Saper B'Yetzias Mitzrayim has Harizem Meshubach. We see that Seder night. A deeper understanding of the idea is that it's not just good to increase the amount that you talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's connect yourself to being a part of the story. Live a life of Torah mitzvahs. Become extraordinary because you are a continuation of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is the Jewish story that started by leaving Mitzrayim. So this answer not says that Yetzias Mitzrayim is better than Matan Torah, it says that Yetzias Mitzrayim actually includes Matan Torah because it's the root, which then Matan Torah is an expression of that. And I want to take it one step further because that sounds great. It sounds extraordinary. But what does it mean that Matan Torah is included within Yetzias Mitzrayim? So I had a tremendous chiddush. And I say tremendous because like it inspired me. I was thinking about this a couple weeks ago. I was thinking, this sounds like a great idea that Yetzias Mitzrayim is really includes Matan Torah. But then shouldn't we have the superior experience of Matan Torah by Yetzias Mitzrayim? If it's really includes Matan Torah, why isn't the superior experience of really experiencing Hashem himself, why isn't that by Pesach? Why isn't that by Yetzias Mitzrayim? The first night of Pesach should really include that. I was thinking about it, and it does. Well, why does it? So let's think about this. There's a principle that, and we've developed this many, many times in the past, that everything in life has three stages. The first stage is the ideal, next you lose it, and then you have to rebuild it, and then the third stage is re-getting to that first ideal, but this time you've earned it. So the Maharal talks about this, Ramchal talks about this, Vilna Gaon talks about this. That's why you learn Kol HaTorah Klu in the womb, that was a gift. You lose it, you come to this world, and you have to rebuild it yourself. Same thing applies to Sfiras Omer. The first night of Sfiras Omer, we don't count. The actual date, so it's the first night of Pesach, we don't count that date. We only start counting on the second date. And then we start counting. That's what we're doing. We're building to Matan Torah. But what do? On Matan Torah, do we count the 50th day? No. Why? Because the first and 50th day are really the same. They're transcendent. The 49 days are days of building. We've given a whole shiur on the real nature of Sfiras Omer, what it means. We're not counting. We're building. We're creating ourselves. We go from animals to human, from barley to wheat, from limited to transcendent. We really end up building ourselves through this process of Sfiras Omer. But the first night was that gift. The 50th, the Matan Torah, Har Sinai, the experience of Har Sinai, Shavuos, is really just a revelation of everything that was experienced as a gift on the first night of Pesach. What was the first night of Pesach? Hashem Himself performed Makas Bechoros. Hashem Himself revealed Himself to us. Hashem Himself took us out of Mitzrayim. Didn't do it through Malachim, didn't do it through intermediaries. It was an experience of Hashem Himself. But it was a gift. It was unearned. So we lost that. Then we go through 49 days in the Midbar of having to build it, earning it, creating it, day by day. Every 7 days creates a week. And then those 7 days create 7 weeks. Shavuos. It means weeks, but also comes through a Sheva. Seven. 7 weeks of seven. And after that, the 50th is that the transcendent that results from all those pieces coming together. But it's really a re-experience of that first night, which was a gift, but this time we earned it. And that's why, in a certain sense, the very root of Matan Torah actually exists on that first night of Pesach. And the very core of what we're trying to build stems from that initial first night of Pesach. So it's not only that Yitzchias Mitzrayim contains it, as in it's the roots, the beginning of the process, but actually fundamentally there's an aspect of the Matan Torah experience that was also experienced that night. And obviously Matan Torah is different because it was after we built and earned it, it was where we mashed in a deeper way, where it was the Kabbalah Satorah. But there's still an aspect of Matan Torah that exists within the Yitzchias Mitzrayim, and therefore Zeichel Yitzchias Mitzrayim is not saying instead of Matan Torah, but in a certain sense, in a certain respect, it still contains an aspect of Matan Torah as well. And it's a very deep idea, and basically the premise is that we go based on the root. We trace ourselves back to the root, not to the expression. But I want to share one last approach, one last answer, and we'll end with this. The last answer is that Yitzchias Mitzrayim taught us how to approach and how to perceive this world of nature. Because Matan Torah was an otherworldly experience, but a transcendent experience. So it was an Olam Haba experience. But we don't experience the world like that. As a matter of fact, we don't even have Nevuah anymore. We don't have miracles anymore. All we experience is the world of the natural. But Yitzchias Mitzrayim, as the Ramban teaches us, it shows us that nature itself is actually a miracle. That there is no such thing as nature. The nature is something that happens all the time, but everything is the Ratzon Hashem. It's like if you imagine someone in your mind and you give them a name and a background story and clothing and a face, and you then think about that person, they exist. But if you stop thinking about them, they cease to exist. Well, Nefesh HaChaim says that the only reason we exist is that Hashem constantly wills us into existence. Ozem aspirations b'chol yom tamid. Every single second of existence, we only are here because Hashem is creating us, thinking about us, willing us into existence. Every single moment is a miracle. The only difference between miracle and nature is that miracles happen less often. But nature itself is the same exact concept of a miracle. It's Hashem willing something into existence. Hashem doesn't watch us as nature goes on as it should. Nature is a word we use to refer to Hashem's willing everything into existence. And we need to learn to see the natural as the miracle. That's what the Ramban says, that when he did these miracles by Yitzchias Mitzrayim, he was Megale, that the Nisim Nistarim are also Nisim. By the Nisim Nigloim, by the open miracles, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the actual Lashon is Min HaNisim HaGadolim HaMufursamim Anamode BeNisim HaNistarim Shehem Yesod HaTorah Kula. That's the Ramban Shemos Perik Gimel Pasuk Tezayin, where the Ramban in Parshas Bo says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is revealing by Yitzchias Mitzrayim that everything is a miracle. So why don't we root ourselves back to Matan Torah? It's also a fundamental miracle. Because Matan Torah wasn't an experience that we have nowadays. We're in the natural world. And Yitzchias Mitzrayim taught us how to view the natural world. Matan Torah taught us the goal, taught us the transcendent. It revealed to us the ultimate catch, the ultimate relationship with Hashem. but we live in a natural world, and therefore we go back to Mitzrayim because that's where Hashem taught us how to look at the natural world and say that everything in this world is a gilui of Hashem, is a revelation of Hashem. And therefore all the mitzvos that we have that are zeichel yetzias Mitzrayim are saying, use this physical world and uplift it. Learn how to view the physical as metaphysical. View the physical as spiritual, as transformational, as something transcendent, something extraordinary. And we shared this at the Seder Night Shir a couple weeks ago. But there is a beautiful approach that this is the difference between Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. What's the difference? So there's many famous answers that are given over Minchas Chinuch. Chaim Bress gives a bunch of answers. But one of the answers we developed was that Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is the Yetzias Mitzrayim actual experience. It's the miraculous. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, we talk about the miracles. The Rambam says in Mishnah Torah that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Ikar mitzvah, for those who are old enough, not the children, then you just children who tell the story, but for the adults, those who have intellectual capacity and capabilities, the Ikar mitzvah is to tell for the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is tapping into the miracles Hashem revealed by Yetzias Mitzrayim. But what does Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim do? It says that Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim teaches how to view the rest of the world. That the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim teaches how to view the natural as miraculous too, like the Ramban says. And therefore Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim all year round taps into the fact that we can use the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim of Pesach to kind of frame a light and frame a lens on the rest of our year to view the natural through those same lens. So Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim is basically saying we tap into Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim all year round to view the natural as the miraculous. So Pesach reveals the miraculous, and all year round we remember the miraculous to transform how we view the natural. And this is how you live the Jewish life. You view the natural as the miraculous. You live a transcendent life within the physical. You live a spiritual life within the mundane. And that really is our goal in life, is to bring the Matan Torah experience into this world. Matan Torah taught us what we're striving for, is the goal. And Yetzias Mitzrayim is really, it taught us how to perceive this world. And when we can synthesize those two, we live such a transcendent life. And that's why we root ourselves Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim, because Matan Torah is the goal, but then we come back down and we learn how to view the physical world through that lens. So Yetzias Mitzrayim revealed the miraculous, revealed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, revealed, so to speak, the nature of how to view the natural world, how to view existence. Matan Torah revealed the ultimate relationship with Hashem. It was the ultimate destination. And Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim is then bringing our Matan Torah experience, along with our Yetzias Mitzrayim experience, and bringing it down to how to view the physical world, how to come back down and use this world, which is something that we do all the time. And I'll give you a great proof. If you look at the Psukim, is it something extraordinary? The Psukim say that right after Matan Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Klal Yisrael to come back down and to be with their wives. So what's going on there? So the Gemara actually says something very interesting. It says that the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Nun Tesam Bei says that there was an issur to be with their wives right before, and it says the pasuk says Shuvu Aleichem Leo Aleichem. So it says go back to your tents, which Chazal understand to mean that you should go back to be with your wives. So what does that mean? So a simple understanding is that I had to remove the issur. There's an issur to be with your wives 3 days before, and now there's a heter. But a deeper approach is that Matan Torah was a transcendent experience. But then what was our goal after Matan Torah? Our goal is not to be malachim. Our goal is to be malachim within the physical world, to uplift the physical world. So right after the Matan Torah experience, Hashem says, go back and take the intimacy and the connection and the spiritual connection and engage it in the physical world. Uplift this experience in the physical world and be spiritual beings uplifting their physical experience and revealing the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu within the physical world. And that really becomes our ultimate goal, because Our goal is not to transcend this physical world, it's to bring transcendence into the physical world, to reveal the transcendence of the physical world. And that's really what Pesach was in a certain sense. On Pesach, we live a life of transcendence, of really, you know, b'chipa zon, transcending time, transcending space. But we don't only have matzah all year round. And Shavuos, we have lachem, we have bread. Why? Because once you can transcend the physical, you can use the physical. That was Avraham's mita that he taught the world, that you don't have to transcend the physical world to be spiritual. You don't have to be celibate. You don't have to meditate on a mountaintop all day. You don't have to be a pietist. You can actually use the physical to transcend, which is why his mitzvah was bris milah, taking the most animalistic organ in the body and using it to transcend. And that's important, though, because once you can transcend, once you don't need the physical, then you can come down and use the physical. That's why we first have Yom Kippur, where we're malachim, where we're all white. We say Baruch Shem Kvod Machshav Lavad, something that only malachim say. We, you know, the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim because he's, you know, completely transcendent on that thing. No man can go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But once we have Yom Kippur, once we transcend, once we connect to our angelic selves, we don't wear shoes, we don't engage in the physical in that day, we don't eat, we don't engage in anything physical or corporeal or limited. But then we have Sukkot, Zman Simchas Seinu, Simchas Beis HaShoeiva. We're eating, you know, festive meals of Basar and Yayin. And what's going on? Because once you can transcend, once you tap into that perfect root, then you can come down and use the physical world. That's the concept of wine. Wine is something so physical, something that can be corrupted. But every Zman of Kedusha, we uplift it with wine. Because wine is something which can be, it is the most physical substance, since the Vilna Gaon says the only physical, not the only, but one of the physical substances that gets better over time. All physical things, you know, decay and erode over time. Wine gets better because it's the most spiritual physical entity. Because it can be used so inappropriately, but it can be used so appropriately. The Maharal says that everything is potential in this world. And our job is not to escape the physical. It's one of the reasons why Nazir has to bring Karmel Chattis, is because there was a problem with him not engaging in the physical and uplifting it. It's not the ideal spiritual path. The ideal is to engage in the physical and uplift it. And that becomes so important because the whole world is a Gilui of Hashem. The whole world, our job is to recognize how everything in the physical world is an expression of the spiritual and to source everything back to its ultimate root. And you don't do that by escaping the physical. You do that by engaging in the physical and connecting the physical back to the spiritual. So now we can understand the Ramban, who says that really our whole goal of life is to keep the experience and the consciousness of Matan Torah with us as we engage in the physical world. And something so powerful. It's you live a physical life while still connected to the transcendent. And you reveal the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's actually fascinating. The Ramban says, the Lashon of the Ramban is, he says, very interesting. He says, you shouldn't forget. So the question is, what does it mean that you shouldn't forget? You should remember. Zeichel Yitzias Mitzrayim. You should remember. It's like we have the six zechiros, right? Yitzias Mitzrayim, Matan Torah, Amalek, Egel, Miriam, and Shabbos. So the question is, all other of these five zechiros, it says you should remember, right? Zeichel Amalek, zechira by Shabbos. But when it comes to Matan Torah, it says Pentishkach. Don't forget. You want to look it up yourself, you can look up in Dvarim, Perek Dalad, Pasuk Tes, Pentishkach. So the question is, what does it mean, don't forget? But the answer is like this, Rosh Shapira says. When it comes to remembering, you have to recreate the experience within your consciousness. You recall it, you trace it back. You bring it back into the forefront of your mind and your consciousness. Pentishkach is saying, don't forget. Why? Because it's never supposed to leave. It's supposed to always remain within the forefront of your consciousness. You should always be there. And if you think about it, that is our goal in life. It's to always be at that mantra experience, to always keep that at the forefront of our mind. It's why the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash became the replacement of the Matan Torah experience. It was continuing that experience. And once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Beis Medrash and the Shul became the continuation of that experience where we tap into that avira, that connection, that delving into. Because what is, how do we keep the consciousness, the connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu nowadays? How do we recreate the Matan Torah experience? It is through the Torah. It's through Torah, Tefillah, and keeping mitzvahs. It is connecting constantly our mind, our actions, and our will, and our emotional reality, our entire existence, always tapping into the nature of truth, always devoting our lives to the truth, living a higher existence, and tapping into that inner consciousness of connecting to Kadosh Baruch Hu, which is done through, what's the Torah? Torah is a gilui, it's a revelation of Kadosh Baruch Hu's will and Kadosh Baruch Hu's machshava. And through learning Torah, delving into the deepest essence of Torah, and living a life of truth, and really working on yourself and becoming the best version of yourself, you are continuing that Ma'an Torah experience. And the ultimate ideal is Bilvavi Mishkan Evna, is to have that internal Mishkan within yourself, to be a vessel for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, both in terms of your internal experience and also revealing that out to the world, to speak Torah, to think Torah, to become one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to become so connected to truth, to live a life where your entire world is a deeper, more intrinsic, it's really what we talked about, the building that inner das, where you're so deeply connected to yourself, to your higher self, to your best self, living your ultimate life, and revealing HaKadosh Baruch Hu to everyone else, including yourself, including ourselves. So obviously this was a lot. And I'll be very honest with you, I was debating to break this up into parts, but when it comes to part one, part two, part three, a lot of people, they, you know, listen to a part here, a part there, but this is one structure. It's understanding the difference between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Ma'an Torah, why our Masorah is rooted in Yetzias Mitzrayim, what Ma'an Torah was that Yetzias Mitzrayim. It wasn't why we always go back to Yetzias Mitzrayim if Ma'an Torah is far superior to Yetzias Mitzrayim. And this is a dialogue. There is so much in this discussion. And, you know, I've thought about this for years and years and years. And if you want to listen to this again and again and again, there's so much in here. And don't think that this is a finished picture. This is a conversation. This is the beginning point, the starting point for you to think about these ideas. But there is one thing that I want you to leave with, which is that our goal in life is to be rebuilding the Ma'an Torah experience within our own lives. As the Shulchan Aruch Kaddish says, we were all there, but our goal in life is to build it within ourselves, to constantly be delving deeper into everything, building a more nuanced approach to everything, to really be thinking. Obviously, you want to be engaging the physical world. You want to be doing, right? Omer Mat Vaseh Harbe. You also want to be engaging your emotional self. You want to really make sure that you're feeling and experiencing on the lower level of experiencing how you live your life. Tefillah should be real. Mitzvah should be done, you know, bezrizus and with excitement and with energy. And you want to engage your intellect. You want to be learning Torah. You want to be engaging in sugyas and shas and learning Torah b'yin and learning Gemara b'yin and really delving into sugyas and really doing them well. And you want to really be thinking about your purpose in life and why you're here. And you want to be developing your intellectual faculties, your rational faculties. Become intelligent. Use the midah of bina. But the ultimate goal is to engage in das, to engage in inner chachma, inner wisdom, the deepest level of wisdom, inner awareness, inner consciousness. Become more self-aware of yourself, of your kochos, of where you want to build yourself. And start to build an inner awareness of life, of inner consciousness. That's how you build your inner relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. How you build your inner relationships with your spouse, and with your friends, and with Klal Yisrael. But it starts by building within yourself. And that's really the main point of this year, is that the highest level of knowledge is inner das. It's inner awareness, higher level intrinsic core experiential knowledge. Higher experiential knowledge. And we're not going to get into it now, but that's really the ikar core of what Nevuah is. My bracha is that we should all strive to really build this inner das, this inner knowledge, and we should constantly strive for higher levels of das. Because, as the Ramban says, you will never, ever, ever attain the ultimate truth. But our goal in life is to get infinitely closer. And there is no end. It goes on forever. Olam Haba is continued levels of ascension. And there are just stages of existence, stages of life. Right now, our stage of life is to endlessly pursue higher levels of knowledge, higher levels of becoming the best versions of ourselves, of doing the most good in the world, and becoming, you know, forever, ever, ever closer. You know, continuously getting closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And my bracha is that we should really build and continue to build this Ma'atur experience within ourselves as we go through Sfiras Omer, as we build towards Shavuos, let's remember the goal of constantly experiencing Matan Torah.